Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Tuesday, the 11th of May, recording at 5:20 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, that's much earlier than I usually record, but that's because Owen is flying to the UK for the chart seminar, and I have a business dinner this evening. But there's plenty to talk about at this time. But first, a quick look at the highlights so far. Now, the Asian stock markets were pretty well all a bit lower, including China. And the European stock markets were certainly weak at the outset and throughout most of the day, but then paired losses as Wall Street firmed. And I noticed that the DAX and Swiss SMI actually ended with modest gains on the day. Now, the Dow had been down 100 points at one stage, but is currently up 50. The S&P is up nearly 6 points. So we've seen a firmer tone, and it's actually being led by the NASDAQ in here today. What else to mention? Long-dated government bond prices are slightly easier in the USA, but they are slightly firmer in the UK. In currencies, we've got a mixed picture. The dollar was quite strong earlier on, with the yen even stronger when stock markets, I'll come back to that point, but let me explain what's happened subsequently. Sterling was quite weak earlier on, but has firmed on stories that the discussions between the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats have ended in an impasse. And that's pushed Sterling back up to just beneath the 150 level as I speak. Now, gold was strong, but has seen some of those gains pared back. But nevertheless, bullion is still at 1218 and a half here right now. Platinum is back to the $1,700 level. Silver's been strong today, up nearly 70 cents at 1924. And elsewhere, industrial metals, they were fairly weak earlier on, but have cut back those losses quite considerably, as have soft commodities. And crude oil, which dipped to 75.36, is currently up slightly at 77.13. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, in terms of stock markets, obviously after last week's gyrations, nervous conditions persist. But the most important factor, I feel, is the climactic nature of that sell-off that we saw on Wall Street on Thursday and the knee-jerk reactions that we saw elsewhere on Friday. Now, whatever caused that meltdown on Wall Street, and it obviously had something to do with the high-frequency algorithmic trading, it was certainly a flush-out. And it would have caused a lot of the weaker holders, people who are more anxious about markets, to chop positions. It also moved many indices back to and even a little bit below rising 200-day moving averages. The data that interests me most here was the spike in the VIX index, which on Thursday and Friday of last week pushed up over the 40 level. Now, if you look at the chart in the library, and I've also posted it here today, you will notice that spikes to 40 or higher are relatively rare, and they are usually signs of climactic selling activity, in other words, the end of a sell-off. And the only exceptions to those are when a crisis is deteriorating very rapidly and persistently. Now, we certainly had a rapid deterioration in sentiment towards the Southern European sovereign debt problems last week. That caused yields to spike. But the deal that the ECB unleashed led to a huge downward reaction in those yields, as you know, and has, in my opinion, certainly capped the problem for the medium term. That doesn't mean that the European sovereign debt problem is over, and is we can totally forget about it. In other words, I don't feel that way at all. But I've emphasized in previous broadcasts, not only on this crisis, but also others, that for a single event such as the Southern European sovereign debt crisis, for that to go on dominating sentiment with an overwhelming influence, that crisis or whatever crisis we're dealing with has to be seen to be deteriorating. Once it once there's any reversal in that pattern, once, in other words, investors suspect that we are beyond, or markets are beyond, a short-term nadir in that crisis, then we usually get a rebound. And I believe that's what's happening here today, and this actually started on Monday, as you know, with a dramatic move to the upside that we saw. So my feeling is that if you look at all those stock market indices, that while they plunged and then rebounded quite sharply, they could easily move a little bit closer to the highs that we saw last month before we encounter any significant resistance. And I'm not sure how significant that resistance will actually be. Now, in the meantime, as I say, I think we could see some further recovery over the short term. Now, why do I say that? Well, first, to the short-term technical dynamics that I mentioned involving both the yields for Southern European bonds and also the VIX index, and also the extent of the reactions back to the rising 200-day moving averages for stock market indices. But then also we have the background factors, which remain one of short-term interest rates, certainly very low in the OECD countries, not all that high in the stronger emerging market, progressing market growth economies. And long-dated government bond yields also, now that they've fallen back in Southern Europe, we do not have any spiking long-dated government bond yields anymore, and some of them are really quite low, I think perhaps unrealistically low, but the main point is that that's not a problem for global stock markets. Short-term interest rates are likely to remain low. We don't have a dollar crisis. We have a soft euro, but it's not falling at a rate that I would describe as representing a crisis, and indeed it suits Europe and most of all Europe's exporters to have a soft euro in here. So again, the quantitative easing that we have seen in the USA and in the UK, we've certainly seen from the ECB in spades over the weekend, and that's likely to steady markets in the short term, just as we had seen with other markets earlier in the year. Okay, what about the long-dated government bonds that were not so affected by the European debt crisis? And I think where we had safe haven buying, we're likely to see some retracement of those gains. But the net effect was a deflationary scare, and that pushed down crude oil. That's good news overall. So again, we don't have an inflationary problem in the markets right now. Now, inflation and deflation often coexist at the same time, as I've mentioned repeatedly, that you'll be well aware. Unfortunately for householders, most of the things that we require on a monthly basis, if not even a weekly and daily basis, have been moving upwards in price. Food, for instance, energy costs overall, often due to tax increases associated to that energy. Government services almost certainly costing more. Now, that is uncomfortable, but in terms of wage spirals, well, they don't exist. We don't have much inflation. There's very little inflationary pressure in any manufactured goods as well. So there's no reason, really, for central banks to ramp interest rates higher. I think that where we do see further raises in further hikes in short-term interest rates, they will be incremental, and in countries where growth is quite strong, and therefore inflationary pressure is slightly more of a concern than is the case in the OECD. But the bottom line, you net it all out, is that monetary policy remains accommodative, and that usually trumps most other factors in terms of what stock markets do. So nervous times overall, yes, but this selling that we have seen has cleared the air. If I'm wrong or way over optimistic regarding these prospects, then we would see closes beneath last week's lows. And I've mentioned this factor before, as has Owen, but until or unless we see closes beneath last week's lows, I would be inclined to give the benefit to sideways to higher trading for most stock market indices. What about precious metals? Well, gold has been a stellar performer in here against this background. The most significant developments, in my opinion, is the way gold has uncoupled, at least temporarily, from the US dollar, against which it would tended to move inversely, and it is also uncoupled, at least temporarily, from Wall Street, in which it had been moving in lockstep for much of the year, and also much of last year. So gold remains extremely firm and on course to see an extension to the advance that began last September. And that's likely to take a number of precious metals with it, including silver, which I mentioned has been so strong in here for the last couple of days. And I'd be very surprised if platinum and palladium did not move higher as well. Now, precious metals benefit primarily from that investment buying as a safe store of value. I beg your pardon, I should say gold and silver benefit mainly from that. Platinum and palladium benefit from it as well, but they are their fortunes are a little bit more closely tied to perceptions regarding industrial demand, and therefore there is a Wall Street correlation factor there to be considered. But all remain in overall upward trends, and I think they're going to move higher. In terms of currency activity, the U.S. dollar is still mostly steady, but least so against the resources currencies and emerging Asia. And the dollar, while it benefits from safe haven demand when people are nervous about stock markets or nervous about sovereign debt situations, it tends to ease when investors are a little bit more relaxed. Having seen some panicky flights into the US dollar and some panicky unwinding of yen carry trade situations, I wouldn't be surprised if the yen, which was the strongest currency in the world for parts of last week's drama, isn't considerably weaker in the weeks and months ahead. And I think that's a wrap here on this yet again very interesting day. So all the best to all of you.